You are listening to Confronting the Pipe Dream, voices on the front lines of resistance against pipelines. Confronting the Pipe Dream is a grassroots radio project which seeks to unite voices across colonial borders and bring those voices from the front lines to the foreground. As pipelines continue to expand, so does people's resistance. If we're going to stop the flows of oil and gas that are threatening our communities, we need to first open the airwaves. On today's program, we'll hear an interview with Ellen Gabriel, a Mohawk activist who has been speaking out against Enbridge's proposed Line 9B reversal project.
It's very easy to fall into something that says, we're going to give your community jobs. There's going to be such benefits economically to your communities. But there needs to also be a vision on the other side of, okay, well, what happens after all this is done?
So to begin, can you tell us a little bit about the Enbridge Line 9B project and the work that they've been doing on Gunasagi's traditional territory this past summer?
Well, I'm not too sure about the details. You'd have to ask Enbridge itself because it's very under the table. But they did do some digging to check the stability of their pipes. I don't know if they've changed any, but there was some digging that was pretty obvious. The reversal flow will be accepting tar sands oil, and the concern, with good reason, that many people, not just the Mohawks in this area, are worried about is the fact that the bitumen that is used to make the tar sands oil flow is very corrosive on the pipes, and there's been so many disasters already with these pipelines that we don't think that this is a viable kind of activity in our community. That being said, the infrastructure has been there for at least 30 years, if thereabouts. There's no royalties that are coming to the community because of this resource extraction, which is actually taking place. These pipelines are in a national park, Oka Park, which is where our traditional settlement was before Sulpicians came with the Christian Mohawks, Nipissings, and Algonquins. So the area that it's in is questionable of why the Quebec government would actually give a permit to Enbridge for this kind of activity. Enbridge is not interested in dealing with us, as far as I know. And I think that's the whole crux of the matter, is how do we get any kind of justice for a development that was done without our free, prior, and informed consent. The whole notion of bringing in tar sands oil is very repulsive, actually, to us. But I think there's more that probably people who are experts in the engineering of this whole project would be able to answer.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to talk a little bit more with you about free, prior, and informed consent. I think it's a philosophy or principle that settler communities in Turtle Island are not talking enough about. The Unist'ot'en clan, for example, out in the West Coast, they have reinstated free, prior, informed consent as a protocol in terms of dealing with pipeline companies on their territory. So I'm wondering if you could maybe just tell us a little bit more about free, prior, informed consent and you know, how you see it in relation to dealing with these companies.
Well, it's actually a standard, a human rights standard that is specifically mentioned in the UN Declaration in regards to protecting the collective rights of Indigenous peoples on any kind of matter, not just resource extraction, but any kind of a matter that directly affects our right to self-determination. The right to have free, which means there's no cost, there's no kind of price tag that's accompanied with the consultation process, and to be free as well to decide without any coercion, whether or not we accept development. And it has to be done prior to the actual development being taking place on our territory. We have to know about all the consequences or the impact that it's going to have on the environment, on the territory, on our rights, our quality of life, and the ability to withhold consent if we deem it not beneficial to us and negatively impacting our rights as Indigenous peoples. That's the crux of why, one of the reasons actually why the Canadian government under Harper did not support the UN Declaration, because they said that Indigenous people's right to withhold consent is not acceptable to them and goes against the Canadian Constitution. Whereas, you know, inherent rights means our right to be nations, the right to self-determination, to decide what's going to take place on our territory. The free, prior, informed consent is something that the UN human rights bodies have urged various UN member states to implement in their relationship with Indigenous peoples. And it's really something that I think is extremely important in future development, whether it's resource extraction, whether it's condo development, whether it's something on education. There needs to be an extremely honest and done in good faith way of dealing with Indigenous peoples to understand exactly what is going to happen. So free, prior, and informed consent is actually a standard that needs to be understood, especially by the Canadian government. It's interesting, though, that the businesses, there is a document that was made commissioned by the UN, and the professor is Ruggles, and it talks about human rights and Indigenous peoples in regards to development. So many companies are now trying to get the free, prior, and informed consent of Indigenous peoples. It's just, you know, from what I understand, it's not exactly in the true sense of that standard. Because sometimes, you know, like what's been done in the past by many governments of Canada, they sit down in a room, they explain to you a little bit about what's going to happen, and to them that constitutes consent. Well, consent means, or free, prior, informed consent includes the whole community or the whole nation, if that's possible, for the whole community to understand and to agree to this kind of activity on our territory.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of the Canadian government, I mean, the issue of pipelines has been huge and probably will continue to be a huge issue for people across the country over the next few years. The Harper government has basically stated that the pipelines are an economic necessity for Canada. A lot of mm-hmm. provincial governments have kind of followed suit. Yet we've seen several different Indigenous nations who are located directly on the paths of these pipelines standing up to say no. I just mentioned the Unist'ot'en out west before, also the Amjanong First Nation in southern Ontario. And I guess the question for you is, has there been, you know, much coordination amongst different nations, or what would you like to see in terms of you know, different First Nations across the country taking a stand?
Well, I don't think there has been a concerted effort, actually, by the different communities that are affected by this. I think there's people who are reaching out and who probably are working well together. The connection between the East and West, I don't think, has been forged in a very strong or significant way. I think we're watching each other and supporting each other in various different ways. It would be nice to be able to have the opportunity to get together, whether it's by Skype or a meeting, you know, taking advantage of a meeting where people will be like an AFN assembly or of some sort to discuss strategies. Because it's really important that people understand that, yes, while, you know, TransCanada and the Canadian government, for that matter, it's not just energy security, they're touting this kind of activity as being nation building because it's creating jobs. And the emphasis should really be on a sustainable development that has that benefits everybody, not just one gender. So these jobs are very male-oriented because it requires heavy lifting, it requires a different kind of skill. But at the same time, you know, it's the impact on the environment that I think we need to be very cautious about in regards to our right to self-determination, but the continuation of being able to identify ourselves as Indigenous people, because our relationship with the land is what makes us who we are, whether it's our culture and our language that relates to our relationship to the land, or whether it's the quality of water that we have. There's so many things that are involved, and I think it's very easy to fall into something that says we're going to give your community jobs. There's going to be such benefits economically to your communities. But there needs to also be a vision on the other side of, okay, well, what happens after all this is done? What can we use of our territory that can be, and not reclaim the way we see the tar sands commercials talk about, you know, underneath all the earth that they claim trees and squirrels are living on is a very contaminated site. So the free, prime, informed consent would deal with those kinds of things, if not just next year this is what's going to happen after we finish. No, it's going to be like, what's going to happen in 25 years, 50 years, or 100 years? And that's the kind of visioning that we should be looking at, because sustainable means that it's going to be able to, future generations will be able to also benefit from this activity. And I find it's very narrow visioned by the Harper government, by Enbridge and others. It's a narrow vision and a very quick fix in regards to employment, in regards to energy security. And I think more people need to become involved, not just Indigenous peoples, but the average person in general, because we are living in a very unsustainable lifestyle. I forget how many Earths we would have to see for all of the whole world, the global community, to live the way North Americans live, or even Europeans. So it's really such a complex issue, and there doesn't seem to be anything that is able to stop the Harper government from supporting these oil companies and gas companies who are contaminating and polluting the land. Because they're using energy, they're using this so-called nation building that will provide jobs. But it's a very scary scenario when you think about it. And I think we need to have that time, you know, that freedom, part of the FPIC, the free, prior, informed consent, also the freedom to have the time to think about things and not be rushed with the timelines of corporations or government.
Mm-hmm. And lastly, so there was a demonstration that was held in Ganasatagi this past summer on July 11th, which, mm-hmm. of course, was this past year is the 23rd anniversary of the Ganasatagi land defense, or perhaps more commonly known as the Oka Crisis. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, because you, of course, played quite a central role in that, can you reflect a little bit on the legacy of the summer of 1990 in terms of, you know, the current struggle that we're seeing against pipelines on your territory?
Well, I think the legacy of that time, that summer, was more of awareness, not just for Canadians on the history and the relationship between Canadians and Indigenous people, but Indigenous peoples themselves. I think there was a large acceptance of the government knows what's best for us, and the people who were resisting that kind of resistance against assimilation were small in number. And now I see that the numbers have grown quite exponentially in regards to resistance of colonial policies and laws. There's also more of awareness of the environment, and I think there's different ways you can look at it. It united people at a certain point in time, both Indigenous and Canadians alike. It brought to the international stage the issues and the plight of Indigenous peoples in Canada, just as Idle No More has done. So there is similarities, there's parallels to be made in between those specific events in our history. But I think it did not benefit the community that was under attack at all. We've struggled on so many levels, whether it's uniting to stop development or whether it's just, you know, trying to create some form of good governance amongst ourselves. It's been very divisive, and you know, we're waiting for the day when we can raise our head above water in many respects. So all these developments have gone on because the community has been divided, because the government uses that as an excuse to allow third parties to come in and do things like putting in pipelines, like fracking for gas and condo development. So it was extremely important for us to be in Oka Park this year to make sure that even our own people are aware that, you know, just because the Canadian government draws a line between what they consider Oka and Gunnasadage, they are the same community. Oka is Gunnasadage. Oka Park is our part of our territory. And we should also be deciding on what kind of development goes on. And we should also be getting the royalties. And it's a shame that even after 23 years that nothing has been settled. Not the long-standing historical grievances that we have talked about and tried to negotiate during the summer have ever been settled.
You've been listening to Confronting the Pipe Dream, voices on the front lines of resistance against pipelines. This project is supported by the Media Co-op and Kuperg McGill. Original music brought to you by One Speed Bike. For more information on this series, please contact Confronting the Pipe Dream at riseup.net.